I just think sometimes we look so much about what young people can't do or children can't do instead of looking at what they can do. Why can't we look at the strengths? Why do we get so into assessment, and not looking at the imagination, the curiosity, which I had? Why is the sky blue? I was doing that philosophy questioning, but I wasn't having those kind of conversations, nor was I having those with my peers. I would spend lots of times in the classroom just feeling very invisible, but I was visible to the teachers, because when they asked me to read, I just wanted the crowd to swallow me in. I just didn't want to do that. Why don't you ask somebody who can read and not ask me so I can learn from them, rather than putting me through it? You can see I'm struggling, but you're still putting me through something with my heart starting to beat fast. My hands are getting sweaty. I'm scared. I'm anxious. That's where the trauma started. I didn't know what that was, but that's what started to happen. So much so, I started to be selectively mute. By the time I was 10, 11, that's when I really started to think, I'm not going to be this label that was given to me. I have to give myself time because I have to pace myself. So my mornings are really sacred. Nobody disturbs my mornings because I'm doing stuff. And it is sometimes on the computer. It is meditating. It is doing some stretching. It is going for a morning walk in the park. It's all of those things. And I do a little bit of my photography while I'm doing it, because I get to see sunsets. I get to see birds and all sorts of things. So I make that conscious decision to make time.
Hello and welcome to the Qualified Tutor Podcast, the podcast that brings you the latest in the world of tutoring, edtech and education, and hopefully inspires in you the big change that each and every one of us is capable of. Qualified Tutor is an industry-leading tutor training organisation and online tutoring community for thousands of tutors around the world. This podcast is the voice of this community, where we aim to hear from tutors, teachers, entrepreneurs, coaches, business experts, students, tutorpreneurs, and more from the world of tutoring about what inspires them every day, how they can help tutors like you, and what they've learned about tutoring along the way. The question is, what will you learn today?
Welcome to this episode of the Qualified Tutor Podcast. My name is Ludo Miller, the host of this podcast. Welcome back to regular listeners. Welcome to any of you for whom this is your first time listening to the Qualified Tutor Podcast. And of course, a huge, huge welcome to today's guest, Marcia Brissett Bailey. Marcia, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm good. For those who don't know, this is Neurodiversity Celebration Week. So it's amazing to be here as part of the podcast during this week. So thank you so much for having me.
That's wonderful serendipity, isn't it there, Marcia? And I hope that we can get into that area, that topic, a little bit more over the next kind of 25 minutes or so. Now, before we just dive right in, although listeners, as I said, they're the regular hosts of this podcast, they don't need to hear my voice too much more. I want to give them a little background, because Marcia, you've done a great many things over your life and your career. You are currently doing some incredible things, and I'm sure you will do an equal number of amazing things. So let me just give a little background to you. You are a voice for change across many sections of society: race, gender, disability, social mobility, to name just four of those. Marcia is co-founder of the British Dyslexia Association Cultural Perspective Committee, an advisory board member of the Centre for Neurodiversity at Work and Neurodiversity in Business, a regular international speaker for Business Forums International and D&I Leaders on the impact of SEND in society, dyslexia in business, eradicating harmful stereotypes across the sections I mentioned just now. And excitingly, Marcia, an author on, amongst many things, dyslexia and neurodiversity in the workplace. Now, I'm not a big one for titles, Marcia, despite that being one of the most impressive roll calls we've had on the podcast. I prefer to hear the story and the insights behind how someone has got there and reached those titles, as it were. And we are lucky today that you have such a powerful and important story to tell. And finally, I'm not ashamed to say that I contacted Marcia several times, sometimes without reply. I know that you're very, very busy, Marcia, to invite Marcia onto the podcast. So I'm very glad that you're on the show now with me and that our listeners are able to hear your story. So, yeah, with that in mind, let's dive right in.
Wow, you make me sound so good. Like, I live this life that's just like... Can you give me that, what you've just written, so I can use it, because it sounds really good. Well, where do I begin? Where do I agree? And I think my journey to where I am today is really started from a place, I'm going to say it and keep it real, from trauma. It really is. So it started at primary school. I would say I was in year four. Everything was fun. Everything was great, primary school, because you had infants when I was going into school. So the infants was all about play, imagination. Nothing was stressing me, anything creative. But it's when I went to year 4 or 5, it was more about rope learning and standardized testing to test where you are and where your abilities are. Well, that didn't feel good at all. And that made me feel quite closed and felt like I didn't belong, because as much as I love school, and school was great right up to that stage, it started to feel not so great, and I didn't feel that school loved me, even though I loved school. So school was, yeah, I was finding this is a place we're told we have to go by law from the age of 5. You need to go to school unless you're homeschooled or whatever else parents do to, you know, educate their children, whatever the options are. But for me, it didn't feel quite right. And it was like becoming a mismatch. I started to feel like a bit of an alien. So I would spend lots of times in the classroom just feeling very invisible, but I was visible. To the teachers, because when they asked me to read, I just wanted the crowd to swallow me in. I just didn't want to do that. Why don't you ask somebody who can read and not ask me so I can learn from them, rather than putting me through it? You can see I'm struggling, but you're still putting me through something where my heart's starting to beat fast, my hands are getting sweaty, I'm scared, I'm anxious. That's where the trauma started. I didn't know what that was, but that's what started to happen. So much so, I started to be selectively mute. I thought, if I didn't speak, this is my clever idea, if I didn't speak, I would be invisible and then they wouldn't ask me to read. The teachers wouldn't ask me to read. But that's not what happened. It continued to the point that my mum went to those days, you could go to the headmaster, go through the school. There was no reception, as it were, to sort of stop you and say, have you got a meeting? You can go straight to the headmaster's door, which my mum did, and knocked on the door. And it was just almost like I felt the drums were coming. My mum was there. Oh my gosh, when your mum or your parents coming or your carer is coming to school, it's quite serious. Like, it wasn't like, hello, let's have a cup of tea. And she just said, my daughter's not reading, you know, and compared to her peers and her cousins, she's not doing this. And they ended up getting psychotherapy for me, because they actually thought, which I'm going to just say and nip it in here, even though I can sort of bring it in later in our conversation, they thought that something was happening at home rather than something that was happening in school. The traumas were happening at school. So it's really important that I mention that, because one of the other things, there's so many interlayers, because when we talk about intersectionality, so not only was I going to, you know, my education and the environment was such within Hackney at the time, which was probably perceived as a kind of low deprived borough at that time. So I had that going on, didn't really understand that, because I was just, you know, getting on and thinking of, you know, school and my friends. But there's also that whole thing, my grandmother, which I grew up with, would be telling me, you've got to work twice as hard as a young Black girl to be able to achieve anything. And then you've got, was those one of the failings or the things that will happen at school that I would just miss, because I was kind of just going to be a statistic of a young Black girl going through the system. And I feel that still closely, dearly today. And it's not something that I know something was happening. I can't prove it entirely, but I was definitely missed in education. There was definitely a mismatch of seeing this lovely young girl who was well behaved, which is what is said in my report, but she wasn't quite grasping or capturing the learning. So already there should have been signs or signals, but the signals weren't there. So For me, school was an experience. Good, thank goodness I was good at something like sport, because it showed me I could achieve something. It showed me I was good at something. And I also realized I was good at words and imagination. So all that time that I wasn't engaging, sometimes when it was really, really difficult, I was creating stories and having storytelling. And I just think sometimes we look so much about what young people can't do or children can't do instead of looking at what they can do. Why can't we look at the strengths? Why do we get so into assessments and not looking at the imagination, the curiosity, which I had? Why is the sky blue? What's, you know, I was questioning, I was doing that philosophy questioning, but I wasn't having those kind of conversations, nor was I having those with my peers. I didn't really have great friendships, but it was because I was just feeling misunderstood. So that's given you a kind of little bit of an insight of how primary school was, and how I just felt that I didn't belong. And we talk about it now with EDI, that kind of inclusion, diversity, equity, and that sense of belonging. Already, I was picking that up from primary school, didn't know those words, but I knew that I didn't feel like I quite belong. And there was an intersectionality around my culture, people maybe misunderstanding about me and my identity. I'll let you speak there, because I can speak for England, sorry.
Yeah, I know. So how did those early experiences shape where you came to work in, the areas you came to work in kind of later on in life? You talked a little bit about that already, about what you were feeling at that time, even as a child, but what kind of effects do you think that had?
I would say the biggest one was when I was going to secondary school, so we would call it that transition to year 11, my form teacher told my parents. And remember, I was trying to do this invisible thing. So I then wanted to be visible when my teacher was telling my parents that I was never going to academically achieve. That was when it started. That's when it started that I decided to decide that wasn't me. How dare she say that I wasn't academically going to achieve, whatever that means. And we're so focused on this academic. What does that mean? What does it mean to be an A student? What does that actually mean? And what about all the other things that you can bring to the table? So I think that was when you had this kind of switch. You're like, did she just say that? You could go one way or the other. The thing is, this is the thing. So the words we say as educators, we have to be mindful. You know, I've worked with young people for a long time, and we've all been a young person, like to think at one point, you can be aware of what adults are saying. And adults can say sometimes things, and they have to be mindful what they're saying, because, you know, I work with young people and they say, I can tell Miss I'm being excluded here, or I'm going over to there because I'm a special person. And these languages and the way we're saying, we really need to be a bit more using more initiative and looking about more entrepreneur and innovation, rather than always fixed on the assessment and where that young person should be according to whoever. I think we need to have a different type of system, but that's another story. So going back to your question, I think, yeah, by the time I was 10, 11, that's when I really started to think, I'm not going to be this label that was given to me. But moving quickly forward, I think secondary school was a bit of a phase. It's just like I went through it. It was like an out-of-body experience, because it was so bad in the sense that I enjoyed my subjects, but I didn't get the right support. And so I wasn't writing essays or structuring things. I think the school quite knew there was something. And I do remember having some ladies supporting me. But for example, I was in a maths class and I would sit on a table by myself, and my teacher would give me, I'm really good with like detecting shapes and puzzles and stuff like that. I'm really good at, that motivates me. I'm really stimulated by things like that, but I'm actually really good at them. So my teacher literally for the whole of my maths lessons, as far as I can remember and recall. And sometimes we, as young people, there may be things happening, but you don't really remember. You only remember the things that you can remember. But literally, I do remember just sitting on a table by myself doing shapes. And I had a book, which I took home. I was so proud of it. It was like wooden cubes, and you can fix it almost like a Rubik's cube, but it was in wood. So it was different shapes. I had to show in 3D how I could create these shapes. But that was my maths lesson for 2 years.
Amazing.
It's amazing, and that was great, but what was I learning to pass the subject? So do you see what I mean? So there was a lot of failures. I came out with the one GCSE in a B. So if you're saying A to B, I got one GCSE. I passed my GCSEs, but A to B, I got one, and it was a B in drama. And if I was able to, or I was taught to structure an essay and formulate it in the way that I know how to formulate an essay from the, you know, the introduction and the supporting sentences and all of those kind of lovely things that you need to do to construct an essay, I would have definitely got an A star if there was one then. But do you see, the system had already failed me.
Yeah. So how do we ensure that talented children with those kind of skills that aren't seen because of the system we force them into, how can we ensure that they don't miss out on the opportunities afforded to those other children? You know,
I think we're hearing things by Hancock and government initiatives about we're going to do screenings for dyslexia, you know, from the beginning. These things are great, but we need to look at the structures of our school and how we support our teachers and the kind of training they have from the beginning. There's all of those kind of things, and I can't solve my lived experience, and I can't speak for everybody. Some people go to private school, they might have different kind of ways of getting access to the right support, but there's definitely something about funding and support. But if we can keep talking about it, keep pushing it, keep making it aware, that's some of the things that I'm trying to do to make change, and also to empower people, empower parents and young people to find their voice, to talk and advocate for themselves, to make change, as well as challenge the system, because there is something about the Equality Act. There is something about, you know, not discriminating somebody and making reasonable adjustments. So that's the way that I'm going in to help others to be educated about and be informed about, not, I don't want to say their rights, but the adjustments, because it's not about us being not able to, it's about the environment, right? So it's how do we make those environments accessible to support all different types of learners. We're not all the same. We're not one glove fits all kind of thing. It's never been like that, but we've obviously had systematic systems and that are made to be like barriers now that we now need to look at differently if we're going to have true inclusivity. Do you see what I mean? We not need to be a bit now be open that the way we're learning can't be just one way. We talk about multi-sensory learning, we talk about all these things, but how are they really based in the classroom? How are some of those young people who are not quite learning? You know, you're testing me on my memory, but that's one of my weakest things. But if you gave me an assignment and I had to talk it, as you can hear me today, I'm going to nail that assignment, because talking is one of my strengths. It's become my strength because the weakness is writing an essay. I mean, the way that, so there's something not quite right, because you have to construct an essay in a way that doesn't work for me, and especially it's testing my memory. It doesn't work. So if we could do that, you can do that one lovely way of writing and I can do my lovely way of talking my assignment. Why not? Why not? And that's the problem. Why not? So that's I'm just sort of touching on that as an equal playing field in a way. We could have options, right? But you're doing it whereby the BTECs are being cut down. There's no creative side. There's so many things that's really cutting down those who learn in that way and are good at those types of things. I'll stop there. I'll put a full stop in, because, you know, when I get onto a row, I don't know when to stop. The full stop does not come. I'll let you get in.
Full stop is just it's just a marker of kind
or
of
a comma.
Yeah, exactly. English grammar, kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. High rules, strict rules. So, I mean, what you're saying there that greater flexibility in the system, and I think part of that is obviously greater funding in those resources and the kind of those staff to support that. You were talking about how in your school days, the support wasn't there. And that was probably through a range of lack of staff, lack of resources. And I think crucially, this lack of understanding of how children were struggling. And I want to touch on one part of what you do that is right at the heart of who we are here at Qualified Tutor, which is community. And that kind of idea of there being a community around each child and that support being there. What does the word community mean to you and your work?
I think there's so many aspects to it. So if I think about the neurodiversity, the dyslexia space, that's one thing. But I always go back to that representation, because people having different experience for different reasons, whether it's to do with your class, whether it's to do with your environment, education, and whether it's to do with, you know, not being included because of things like your race. I'm going to have to be real about that. I think there is something there. It's not obviously in a conversation for today, but there's something around those intersectionalities which disadvantage people and marginalized communities. So when we're talking about communities, there's some communities that are not represented, or we don't hear their voices and we don't hear their stories. But I just got tired of doing that. I got tired of the masking or not feeling that I'm good enough because I've not got an academic PhD, but my lived experience is valid. So I've created my community across, you know, using LinkedIn and various things to talk about it. It's not about trying to segregate or difference, but there are genuine stories that are not being told. There are genuine exclusions and people don't think about it. I think I remember when the whole thing of George Floyd happened, and, you know, that was really, really, really tragic. But I remember people trying to contact me, what can we do? We need to ask questions. We need to look at what our system's about. And that's how we can start. But people see things happening but don't say. We've got to stop seeing things happen and not saying. So there's lots of things that are happening. But I'm all about community. I'm all about equity, helping to empower others to find their voice where they don't feel they have a voice. So as I said, my grandmother always told me I have to work twice as hard. So you've got to remember, or I'm just sharing with you, I don't say you've got to remember, but just share with you that telling a child who's 5 or 6, 7 or 8, you've got to work hard. What is that setting that child up to think about themselves and their identity and who they are? So when I talk about dyslexia, why I talk about representation, it's going to be different for different community groups. We do share something common. It may be the neurodiversity or the dyslexia or being a tutor and supporting one person, but everyone is going to maybe need a different type of learning to get there. And it's really important that you have an understanding of where that person may be coming from as much as you can, and be inquisitive, ask questions. We have to sometimes do do the inside work before you do the outside work. It's all good having all these ticks to say I'm a specialist this and I'm a specialist, but you need to do some inside work to know your community as well. Does that make sense? So I'm all about community. The community is the heart of everything. You know, I'm an East London girl and it's all about community. I'm that time where you left your door open, you did ask people. I don't know why it was so popular. You asked people for some sugar or tea. I don't know why we was always running out of tea and sugar, but people always asking for tea and sugar when your door's open. So for me, community is very important to me because I grew up in a council estate where it was all about community. So it's about knowing your community and having shared commonalities and talking. Don't be afraid. If something's uncomfortable, that means it needs to be discussed or talked about. That's when you should try and go in to find out, how can I do something different? Or how is it that I may be saying something might be not wrong? Don't shy away. Try. And if you build up the courage to go for it, don't get me wrong. I've been shy away because I've always felt different. So it's a difference. You know, as a young Black girl, I'm thinking, oh no, what do I have to say? Because I've been learned that I need to just keep quiet. But where's that come from? So community is so important to me. I hope I've covered community, because the neurodiverse comes out and I go all off, and then I'm trying to bring it back so you can get a picture of what I mean. So
I think we've got a wonderful representation of how that ties into what you do. I think that word, you know, means something different to everyone, really. But finding community is a common idea, you know, whatever that means to you. And you're touching on something there that we can't skip over, I don't think, in this conversation. And even though I said before this conversation that I wouldn't try and bring everything back to tutoring, I can't help myself.
Yeah.
How can tutors and educators be involved in that conversation that you were mentioning earlier about making sure that we give students a voice? How can tutors and educators, I mean, your career in your past, you've been a careers advisor, you know, yeah, you're still very much a mentor to adults and children. How can tutors and educators be part of that conversation?
I think one of the key things, and it's part of my careers training, and also I did some counselling training as well, is about being an effective listener, being personal centred and holistic, and listening and hearing, even hearing the when it's not said. Silence is golden, but it also communicates something when someone's not talking. Obviously, not always you go there, because sometimes people don't want to share, but it tells you something is happening for that person. So effective listening for me is really important, picking up those little unsaid kind of things that indirectly they're saying something, but they don't know how to say it. Confidence and self-esteem is something that we don't always talk about with neurodiversity, dyslexia, and even children who are not any of those things. Sometimes we're being told, or kind of oppressed, I'm going to say that word oppressed sometimes in the way we're learning, that we don't feel that we're ever good enough. I always say now that there's no such thing as perfect, but they never teach you that at school. There isn't any perfect person, but because we've always been told this perfect person is an A grade student, you're already breaking down someone's viewpoint about who they are and who they could be. And I'm all about potential. What is your potential? But if you're telling them they're not good enough, how are we going to be able to be that aspirational person? I had to do a lot of work to get that away from that imposter syndrome, you know, self-sabotage, because that earlier piece of work of my nurturing in education told me I wasn't good enough. So going back to your question, with saying all of that, it's about effectively listening and really hearing your young people and finding out what their interests are, finding out what they like, finding out what some of the challenges they are. Ask them. You know, one of the things I always find when I was a careers advisor, and people say, well, how do you work with young people? You know, they're like the hardest. They're not. It's mutual respect. I'm learning all the time. You never stop. For me, you never stop learning. Learning is continuous. Every person's an individual. You've got a story to tell. You've got a background. You've got a history. I'm interested. I'm always interested, because that's how I'm learning about people. I love people. So I always want to learn, oh, you come from this community group. You come from that group. That's really interesting to me, because that helps me to be a whole person, because I want to know about other people. Does that make sense? So all of those integral things, but I definitely think the key thing for me has been about effectively listening and not listening to, oh my gosh, I've got shopping to do. You're missing a trick when you do that, when you're not really listening to that person, because you're on a timer. If you can make time for it, some of that stuff, even though you have to do the tutoring, sometimes 15 minutes of that time just to find out how that person, they may not have anybody doing that to them. And I know that from my own experience, no one asked me how I was. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, I'm thinking, it's, now that you mention it, you realise, I mean, obviously I'm a full-time tutor as well, as what I do for Qualified Tutor. And so often I start a lesson with 100 things in my head that have been running, you know, boiling up in my head right up to the start of that tutoring session. You know, it starts at, let's say, 4:30 p.m. All the way up to that session, all day I've been thinking about things, doing things. And when I arrive at that session at 4:30 and I start working with the child, my head is just full of other things. And it is so hard to arrive at the right place in the present moment at the start of, for me, a tutoring session, but it could be any session with a child. And you're so right. You have to be present. You have to live in that moment, not just for yourself, but mainly for the child and for their development. It's just, it's too high 100%. Of a stake to be elsewhere, you know, mentally.
100%. And we know we have to try better or do better as adults, because what I'm saying is, even when I was at school and I was maybe getting that support, we can pick up what the adult's vibration, if you want to say energy. I can pick up energy very well, and I did as a child. You can sense when someone doesn't want to really be there, or they've got something else, even if not saying words. You don't have to always say words. Nonverbal communication is just as powerful. So for me, it's those little things. Yeah, it's definitely, you've said it correctly. For me, that's what it's all about. You've got to, whatever you come in the door with, you've got to drop that. Go and wash your hands. Water's really good. Running water to kind of get your food to try to get yourself to be more congruent and be present. Absolutely.
So, Marcia, how do you do it? Each one of your days is so busy. How do you breathe? How do you clear?
I'm going to... I tell you, I do meditation. That's one of my ultimate things. I meditate daily. For me, in the mornings, because my day starts early. I'm a bit of an early bird. So I'm either in the 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock club, either one of those. And that's not to go to work because I work from home, but just because that's how my day starts. It's how I get all the things I don't do, what's not in my day job, I get done. And it's just how I start my day. It's how I can be organized and be present and focus about what I need to do for that day. I write a plan, and I'm not rushing because I've planned that time, because I've woken up, I'm awake. And that's the same, they say that's the time when it's really good to concentrate and work. But people don't make time for those things because they want to sleep. But it's about balance, isn't it? I'm not perfect. And as we said before, no one's perfect, but I try to, that's one of the things that I do, which I think works for me. It works for the way I work. I'm not a last minute person, but I tend to work with adrenaline and just, woo, I sort of do that. And then, yeah, so I have to give myself time because I have to pace myself. So my mornings are really sacred. Nobody disturbs my mornings because I'm doing stuff. And it is sometimes on the computer. It is meditating. It is doing some stretching. It is going for a morning walk in the park. It's all of those things. And I do a little bit of my photography while I'm doing it because I get to see sunsets. I get to see birds and all sorts of things. So I make that conscious decision to make time. But in the middle of the day, in the evenings, it's not so great. Yeah. I'm here now and this is great. But if I'm not doing anything, then it sort of goes, I easily could be under the duvet in a blanket. And yeah, do you know what I mean? So it's that balance, isn't it?
Marcia, you have brought such energy to this and a great deal of experience as well. You know, for those of you who may not have worked out, Marcia has been involved in education for a very, very long time. She's even admitted to me beforehand that she's been involved in education for many more than 30 years, but she says 30 because she doesn't want people to start guessing.
Oh, no.
I've just exposed
you. You're telling my secrets. Yeah.
No, I know. I'm sorry. Yeah,
it's all good. We're a bunch of family, right?
I just want to end with one final question, Marcia, which is, what does 2022 hold for you?
So 2020 holds for me to continue this journey of empowering, I guess. I'm not going to stop. There's so many things that have happened. I don't know if you know recently about the GCSE maths and English. If you don't have those, you cannot go to, you're not going to get a student loan. All of these things are going to, for those marginalized groups. And I didn't pass my GCSEs first time round. Second time round, I even got a grade B in English literature because I had a passion and was good at it. And what I'm saying, sometimes some learners take a little bit longer. So if you're going to penalise them and you're going to penalise them on courses, that, you know, that's something. So my work's not going to stop because those things, now my voice is there and I feel like I can use this space to do it. That's, you know, and I'm also writing a book. I'm in the middle of finishing the book, actually. And so I hope my book's out by the end of the year. And that's about dyslexia and being Black. And why I say being Black, I just think the representation is missing. It's more about elite people within the industry who are neurodiverse. And I just feel we need to change that narrative a little bit. And we need to see people who feel that they can identify and people who look like them. I never had role models. I never knew anybody who was dyslexic, who was Black for a very long time. And those things, role models are very important, or seeing people who look like you. So representation, as you know very early, you talked about that, is very important to me because we have a diverse community, but let it be diverse. It can't be just one way because then people don't feel, they feel like they're included or belong. So that's something I want to sort of continue to focus on. I'll say that's it, but I'm sure there's lots of things around speaking. I'd love to go into education a little bit more, and I'm doing a bit more talks around in education, HE, because that's another area I'd love people to find their voice. We another time have me back and I will talk about higher education and my experience and not feeling again, you know, education and higher education is great. It's been great, but it's also been some places where I've not felt too great neither. And the support mechanisms around that, but let's leave that for another time. So getting more into education, talking, and getting a little bit more militant with it in terms of just saying it as it is. Just, I'm not going to mask anymore. I've done too much masking in my life, and it's not fair. And it's not fair for the next generation. I don't want them to go through it either. We can't do that again. So I'm doing my best as much as I can in my little, you know, capacity to make change. And I'm so happy that you've invited me today. I've really enjoyed today's interview. You made it feel so blast. I could speak forever, but I know we've got to come to an end. So thank you so much. Gratitude always on that. Thank you.
We do, unfortunately, Marcia. And it was actually one of the more stressful parts of my week last week, was trying to decide what to talk about, to boil everything that you do down into 35 minutes was very hard, because you've helped so many communities, and you continue to push yourself to do as much as you can for so many different kind of groups. And if you'd like to catch Marcia as part of what she does as a speaker, then the Neurodiversity at Work 2022 online summit on the 24th of May is one of the big events in Marcia's calendar coming up. You can find out more about that in the show notes, and the links to Marcia's books, upcoming books, website, and previous podcast appearances can also be found in the show notes. And just to cap it all off, Marcia is heading into UK Parliament tomorrow to chat all things education, policy, disability in the workplace and in education. So there is really a lot going on with Marcia, and you really are changing so many lives. So we are very, very grateful that you found the time to join us on the Qualified Tutor podcast. And we will be getting you back on. You know what, Marcia, you're one of the first guests to say you should get me back on. And I really rate that confidence, because you deserve as much exposure to the wider education sector as possible. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much as well. Thank you. So kind. You've said so many nice words about me. Like, is that me? You know, self-taffers. I'm like, no, that's not me. But thank you so much. I definitely will come back. I definitely will. So you're going to have me back. I'm putting it out there into the universe.
Yeah. Well, you listeners, that's the benefit of you get from listening today, is knowing that there'll be another appearance from Marcia very soon. So, cannot wait to speak to you all next time, where we'll be getting Susanna Hardiman, the CEO of Action Tutoring, onto the podcast, and we'll be speaking to her a bit about Action Tutoring's 10-year anniversary and all they're doing to celebrate that. So that's what we got to look forward to next week. But drag the cursor back, listen back to other parts of this conversation. There was so much in there, and do have a look at further resources involving Marcia and her work in the show notes. But for today, that's all for us. A big love to our audience. A huge, huge thank you to you, Marcia, and we'll see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Qualified Tutor podcast. Whether you're a regular listener of this podcast or you've just stumbled across it, join the Qualified Tutor podcast group within the Qualified Tutor community to stay up to date with our latest news, offers, workshops, and of course, simply to meet other tutors like you. Whatever your level as a tutor, our training courses will be the next step in your professional development. Visit qualifiedtutor.org/training to find out more about our CPD accredited and Ofqual recognised courses, the first of their kind in the tutoring industry. Your student deserves the best tutor possible. Make that happen today by joining Qualified Tutor.org.